If you think for 1 second, when you ask your in-home clients, hey, we're starting a clinic, you want to come to the clinic? And they say yes, they're lying to you.
Right.
Most people enjoy in-home services if they have in-home services. And so if you think that, you know, a high percentage of those clients are just going to, they're going to come right to the clinic, that's probably not going to happen. Many of our clients said, yeah, just tell me where it is, right? When you open it, we even gave them the address once we had it. Just tell me when it's open and we'll be there. Hi, my name's Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3Pi² ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3Pi² has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to ABA Business Leaders, brought to you by 3Pi². I'm April. We got Steven over here. If you have listened to us in the past, you know that, you know, we're a little goofy and a little not, you know, this isn't your, if you want a very serious podcast, this is not the one for you. But we do get serious from time to time. All right, well, today, we're going to be talking about expanding from in-home services to purchasing a clinic. But there is, as I was talking to Steven about this idea, right? His immediate response was, or don't, like, you don't have to, right? Yeah. Who says you have to have a clinic?
Yeah, who says so?
And so then that got us having a little chit chat and, on, you know, off air, whatever. And so, we're just showing up today for a conversation about this. Because as he said that, I was like, yeah, you're right. But as my brain likes to categorize things and put things in very specific buckets, I was like, okay, this outline for today is about how to expand in-home to clinic. But yeah, you're right. Like, and so
I think here we that are. This is like, I think this is, this goes back to, okay, what does this company actually look like, right? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Do you have a clinic? Do you have 5 BCBAs? Do you have 50,000 techs? Do you have, you know what I mean? Like, so I think that, like, yeah, okay, that kind of is the natural kind of, you know, evolution of an ABA company. Very similar to, okay, well, I'll do the billing at first, and then I'll outsource the billing, and then, you know, when I get to $2-3 million in revenue, it only makes sense to bring it back in. That doesn't mean that's your path. And so, like, why are you building this thing? To do it like everybody else, or to do your own thing? So, like, just because a lot of people do it this way, I think, like, I hear that very often. Well, the last place I went to didn't pay me for drive time, so why would I do, right? Like, so I think that this is your opportunity to step back and say, you know, take a week and just imagine, you know, in your wildest dreams, what does this company look like? I've had some customers that they did that natural path of, okay, I started my in-home, I've hired a BCBA, I hired a bunch of techs, and everything's good, and I'm going to start a clinic. And then, you know, after about 3 years, she said, I hate this clinic, I don't want to do this clinic. So she closed her clinic and she went back to in-home only. So, like, we don't want, like, hey, everybody makes a, you know, you can change your mind and all that stuff. But if we can avoid adding something because we're supposed to, then let's avoid that.
Yeah, it's all about the intention behind it, right? If you're like, hey, I'm not sure if this is for me, but I'm going to go for it. Okay, great. Yeah. And then if you change your mind, great. For us, we started out in-home, and then we expanded to a clinic, and we had, what, 7 BCBAs total at one point? Yeah, I don't know, 8? I can't remember.
It was enough.
It was more than I wanted, but they were all amazing. But anyways, so we had most of them. We loved you all equally, just differently, but equally. Okay. Anyway, so we are in home. That's where my decades of experience were in home. And of course we did community. I did like in daycares, I did in preschools and in private schools and stuff like that. But like I knew in home, and that's where I thrived, and that's where I liked to deliver services. But I also wanted a clinic. That was on my bucket list from the time I was even before I knew what ABA was, I knew I wanted some kind of like clinic. At one point I thought I was going to maybe be an occupational therapist or something. I don't know. But I envisioned a clinic at one point. So we did. We had that. I don't remember how many square feet it was.
4,000.
It was pretty decent size. Mm-hmm. We had like a conference room with a big conference table, and I felt very formal and fancy. We had like a whole team of BCBAs. We had a lead BCBA. We had, you know, we had really cool, you know, we had space in the back for social skills group. We had some one-on-one time. We had, you know, we never really built the clinic out in that sense in the way that I wanted to, or the way, because we also decided to put that money like back into staff and back into like offering things for them. And that was part of why I was like, you know, like this isn't, having the clinic isn't quite what I had envisioned. And I'm not sure if this, I want to put the money and the time into making it that.
Right.
And Stephen and I had a couple, I think Stephen recognized that before I did, and he kept saying, hey, why don't we look for a smaller, you know, place? Maybe we just want office space for our staff, right? And right. So it took a little bit, but we finally got on the same page, and I was like, yeah, so we, you know.
I don't know if we ever got on the same page.
Same page, but yeah.
I think that, look, like, if we had the relationship we have now, back then,
100%.
I think it would have, we would have been able to do a better job, but we may not have ever gone that route either. Right. So it's hard to say.
I mean, it was years ago. It was. We were in a completely different place in life.
You were like wanting to go slower, and I was really like, I mean, I was pushing. I was pushing
stars.
And yeah, and so, you know, it is what it is.
But anyway, so, you know, we did move back. We decided not to have in office, like to have clients in our office space. So we found a smaller building, which was just then office space. We still had our conference room. We had our BCBA office. At that point, we were down to
trainings.
And we had, you know, and then I had an office. And then we had like the biggest reason, honestly, for a building, for a place, was to have place for trainings and for us to like have meetings and stuff outside of our home, because that's where we started, was working out of our home. For those of you guys who've been here for a while know that whole story. But we had like our toy room, right? Like, because it was so important for me to be able to have a place where techs and BCBAs could come get the supplies and the toys they need to take to the families, because that is a big part of in-home, is being able to supply
those. Can I just say, like, one thing? Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I interrupt you? So if you are doing this with a partner, whether that be a spouse or, like, another BCBA, or, again, it just, that only goes back to my first point, and just, you both need to kind of separate and dream big dreams without the interference of the other, and then come together and say, like, this is my vision, this is your vision, okay, how do we kind of compromise in the areas that we can compromise, and how do we make this vision together, and then maybe you can't make that vision together, and so what do you do next? Like, how do we move forward with a different plan? Because I think that, again, had we, you know, I often say this is like, I've built the resources that I built through 3Pi Squared for 10 years ago, Stephen. It's probably more than that now. These are things that I wish I would have had for us when we started. Like, hold on, a vision for what we want to do? Of course we're going to build the biggest agency ever, and we're going to have multiple clinics, and we're going to go into multiple states, and April's sitting there, I just want a couple of BCBAs, like, just let me be. And so, like, those are very different visions, right? And we never really sat down and said, hey, hold on, are we both going in the same direction here? So this is not something that I would assume. It's really important that... And I would say that even for yourself, because again, I do the same, like, of course I'm going to build more. I don't remember what podcast it was. Well, like, there's 100 floors in this building. Of course I'm going to the 100th floor. Why? Well, and because it's the 100th floor.
Actually, you're going to build, like, the 101st floor.
Yeah, totally. Because I can. Yeah. So, I like, why? Why are you doing this? Why did you start this? What was your intention of starting this? What does this look like? How does it feel? What do you want to have happen every day you come to work? When there is a stressful issue, how do you want to respond to it, right? Like, these are things that are really important to sit down and just imagine, take a little bit of time and just play with that, you know?
Well, and two, I think it's important, especially if you're the entrepreneur, you're the builder, you're the one creating this, and with a team too, but whether you're doing this by yourself, like, thinking, reflecting, or you're reflecting together. Like, also, what's your personal life?
Yeah.
Because when you're building this agency, whether it's in home or clinic or whatever, right? Like, if you dream about, you know, what your vision is and what you want this to look like and your intention, if you leave out, like, what you're wanting, at least your personal, your away from work self, you know, like, because if your complete plan doesn't allow for space for your own personal life, if that's what you want, that's great. But just don't forget about that piece too, because that is the beauty of it, right? You can bring your own self and your own desires and intentions within this too. In fact, it's important too when you're looking at.
And then
the
last thing I'll say on this, like, planning part, like, what is this supposed to look like? Maybe a couple things. If you're saying should a lot, it should be this, it should be that, maybe take a step back. Because it shouldn't be anything. It should be yours. If that's the only should that it should be. And then the last thing, like, if this is your retirement plan, so if this company, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this for 15 years and blah, 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 blah. And then when I sell it, that's going to be how I retire to, I don't know, wherever. Is Costa Rica popular? Somewhere warm, right? So if that is your plan, then we also need to do, like, okay, how does that work, right? Like, how much money do you need? We want to do some financial forecasting so that we can get there in 10 years or 15 years or whatever it is. So we can pace ourselves, right? Or you know, is it a sprint or is it a marathon? So these are important things. And if your whole plan is just to do one-on-one services in a clinic setting, just do in-home, really seriously. Like, you're going to make less profit. You're going to struggle more.
I don't know, though. You say that, but still, I don't think it's as black and white as that. I still think that you have to look at what your intentions are and what you want out of it, because it might be there are some. What at the end of the day, like, what's it, like, your cost, right? Do you want to pay a little more in overhead, or do you want to potentially have less, like, scheduling issues?
You think? I don't think you'll have less scheduling issues. Not if it's just one-on-one. Now, if it's a hybrid system of social skills and one-on-one, then we can make this work. But
well, I guess with like being able to have floaters in the building, like that's one thing. You can have floaters in the building easier, like in an in-clinic, than you can.
You can, but you have to pay for those people, that's and true. You have to pay for the space.
That's so true.
So, like, there's a lot that goes into this, and like if you're in some kind of like regular city place, right?
Suburbs. City place.
I don't know. My words aren't good. I don't got the good words. So anyway, for a 4,000 square foot, like, and a 4,000 square feet will fill up quicker than you think. Normally people are starting off, like the sweet spot seems to be around 6,000 square feet. So, a really rough estimate calculation is 250 square feet per full-time equivalent client. That should cover all the space you would need for admin people and, like training and things like that. So, 250 square feet. If you have a 2,500 square foot building, that means 10 full-time. So what's the price of that? So, like,
it's going to depend on your area too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, yes. And so, like, if you're in Fairfax, Virginia, right, like, do you understand how much it costs to lease somewhere in there? Now, if you go the route of, okay, well, hold on a second, I'm not going to lease, I'm going to buy my own building. Hey, it's an investment, right? But I would not put that under the ABA company name. You would have another company that would own the building, and then the ABA company would be leasing that building. So if you do sell the ABA company, you get to keep your building. And then, you know, this is just another investment that you have. So, I mean, there's a lot to this, but in general, unless you're planning, like if you're just planning on doing regular one-on-one therapy in a clinic setting, I think when I see this, most of the time, your profit margins suck. It's just something to be aware of. That's all.
Eeyore pops up.
I'm just...
No, you're being real. And I think that's important to be real. And you know, it is what it is. I'm wondering, we can continue to chit-chat.
Yep.
Or I do have questions here. And from our original direction.
Mm-hmm.
And do you mind if I ask these questions?
Yeah, that's
and
fine.
Then like you can pass or you can be like, yeah, that's a fine question. However, I want to answer. I want to bring up this point instead. Yeah, or
is
whatever.
It a political answer or is it am I going to answer the question I want to hear or am I going to answer your question?
I mean, hey, let's find out. All right. So first one, what signs indicate that an ABA business is ready to expand from in-home service to a clinic?
Well, like we kind of already talked about like the dream. Okay. So you obviously need to actually want a clinic, right? Like this is
Let's
important.
Say you do. You're like, okay, we want a clinic. We want to try this out. We want to see how it goes. Then, how do you know? And you've already started in home. So mm-hmm. How do you know when to make that shift from in home to clinic?
So the first thing I would do is check out our scaling checklist. It'll give you a score. You want to be, I believe, 200 to 250 before you should be scaling anyway. So the other question that you're going to want to ask yourself, because normally, what's going to happen is that this lease is going to go under your name, not the company's name. Most landlords are not going to be, okay, well, if the company goes under, that's fine. I'll tie it to the company. They're going to come after you for the lease, right? So that's just something you have to be aware of when you do sign a lease. Are you comfortable with like a 4 or 5 year lease where you're on the hook for it? Even if you decide not to keep the company, so or you decide that you're just not going to do this anymore, you sell it. So, like, obviously, you need to be profitable. You would want to have 6 months payroll at minimum in the bank, and then you would probably want to have about the same for the lease, right? Like, so if it's $5,000 a month, then I would recommend having at least that amount in the bank, so that, I mean, delayed payments is just, it's a real thing in this field, right? Like, everything's going fine, and then all of a sudden, it's been 3 months since I gotten a check. What's going on? This is just how it is. So, like, you want to be prepared for that, and it shouldn't be, okay, what am I paying this month, payroll or my lease? Like, that should not be a question that you have to make a decision on. So, yeah, so your company needs to be profitable. How much profit? Average ABA company, you want to be somewhere 15 to 20%. We just did a podcast on cancellations. So that would be something else that I would be looking at. My cancellation rate, my utilization score should be high. My quality of services should be high. What is quality to you? You should already have an answer for that. Man, there's a lot of shoulds here. How do you define quality? And then what KPI do you have in place to measure that you are actually providing quality services? And something that when we started our clinic, just something to be aware of. If you think for 1 second, when you ask your in-home clients, hey, we're starting a clinic, you want to come to the clinic? And they say yes, they're lying to you, right? Most people enjoy in-home services if they have in-home services. And so if you think that, you know, a high percentage of those clients are just going to come right to the clinic, that's probably not going to happen. Many of our clients said, yeah, just tell me where it is, right? When you open it, we even gave them the address once we had it. Just tell me when it's open and we'll be there. And then, we can't drive there at this time. Like, life, right? Life happens. And so that's not on them. That's on you. So normally, you're going to have to market this differently, right? And so I would highly recommend that you have a marketing plan for marketing your ABA practice, whether that is local, organic outreach, or, you know, you decide to do some Facebook ads, but have that plan in place well ahead of time, right? So that's something that I would highly recommend. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
And more. But, okay, so when you just, excuse me.
And more. Okay.
I just need to take a breath.
Yeah.
You brought up a good point, though. So not necessarily are all your clients in home going to want to switch to clinic.
No.
Even if at some point they say, oh, yeah, that sounds great.
No, yeah.
So here's the other big decision, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, so expanding from in home to clinic, okay, that's one thing. So that's assuming that you continue in home, right, and you have a clinic.
Right.
I've talked to numerous BCBAs thinking about starting up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in this beginning, like, creative space where, like, well, this is kind of how I want to see it. I'm thinking I'll just, it's like you said before, like, is the norm. Like, okay, this is how it goes. You start in home, then you go to clinic.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. But, like, it's like, okay, we'll just start in home while I'm figuring things out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are several issues there, but we'll just tackle this one particular one of, okay, so... Okay, you start out in home. Are you planning on stopping in home and just doing clinic? Because I'm thinking back, like, quite a few people I talked to in the beginning, I think that's their goal.
That's kind of the goal.
It's like, oh, I'll start out in home, but I'm going to shift to clinic and only clinic.
Yes.
But then what do you do with these in-home kids that you already have a relationship with and you're providing services for and things are going well, but you're expecting them to move to the clinic and they say no?
Correct.
Or you also are like, oh, they're probably not really appropriate for the clinic. Are you going to keep, like, then you still end up with, like, the split where you're doing both.
Hey, ABA business owners, struggling to navigate the complex world of ABA practice management?
You're not alone. We've been there. And that's why we created the ABA Business Leaders Membership. It's your how-to guide for everything you need to run a successful, ethical ABA practice.
From compliance to culture,
From billing to hiring, we've got you covered with in-depth videos and insider advice you'll wish you had years ago.
Absolutely. But guess what? You don't have to figure it out alone. Our ABA Business Leaders membership isn't just a guide. It's your growth accelerator, featuring 34 CEUs to keep you and your team on the cutting edge.
That's right. Plus, you get exclusive access to content you can't find anywhere else. Think webinars, live Q&As, real-life success stories from practices making it happen.
And the community aspect is unbeatable. Imagine being connected to a network of ABA business owners, sharing, learning, and evolving together.
No more second-guessing your business decisions or wondering if there's a better way. With the ABA Business Leaders membership, clarity, confidence, and continuous learning are what you're signing on for.
So, if you're all in on elevating your ABA practice, join us. It's time your business not just survived, but thrived.
Head on over to 3piesquared.com and check out the ABA Business Leaders membership. Let's take your practice to the next level together.
Yeah, and so like you're like at least for an extended period of time, you're going to have to be okay with having both, even if your ultimate goal is to just have the clinic. And something that I have seen with a couple of customers is that they grew a very profitable, great quality in-home, and they started a clinic, and they love their clinic, and they've sold their in-home practice and kept the clinic. These are things that you could totally do. So, but like most people, and I'm not saying that this is you, but this is just kind of how it is. Like, if you build an in-home agency, it's an in-home agency. And the vast majority of those clients are not going to move to the clinic. That's just something to be aware of, right? And you prove me wrong, right? Like, it's totally possible. You could say, hey, 80% of my clients came. And that's awesome. Great for you, right? Come on and share how you did that. Because you could teach me a lesson or two, I'm sure. But for the most part, maybe you get, I mean, on a good day, maybe you get 20% that move over to the clinic, maybe, right? And so you are going to have to advertise this to a different type of client. So it's just important that you understand that these are different. And then the other thing is that if you do decide to make the switch, there are going to be, and if you're promising, like if you're doing this, hey, we're going to do in-home while we build out the clinic, and that's kind of your sales pitch to your staff, then just be aware that they're like waiting for the, and they're not going to do this hybrid crap, right? Like that. No, I took this job knowing that in 6 months, 8 months, whatever, I was going to be in a clinic position, not, okay, I drive to the clinic, I drive to a home, I drive back to the clinic. That might as well be in home. So you're going to have to, like, there's going to be some staff that is going to be hybrid, but you're probably going to want dedicated in home and dedicated clinic staff. Just to make your life a little bit easier. Yes.
I mean, that kind of like, we're already covering the second question. Okay. It's what are the key advantages and challenges of operating a clinic compared to in-home services? And we kind of just naturally started, moved into that. But what would you say, like, so it seems like the pros to in-home are the overhead, just less cost.
Yeah, there's way less overhead. Yep.
So what would be the cons to in-home?
I mean, the cons to in-home are people are driving, right? There's a lot of risk involved in that, and there's just the drive time, right? Mm-hmm. Again, if you're in a, what did I call it, a city-type area, it's going to be a lot of traffic. So, people do not like traffic, and they don't want to have to drive in it multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. So that's another issue that you will have, and so cancellation rates are typically higher with in-home than they are with clinic, but they're higher with the clinicians, but normally in the clinic they're higher with the clients, right?
Whoever's doing the most traveling at those difficult times of day to travel. Yes. So okay, if we're looking at clinic, like just purely looking at clinic, so we could say like the pros are potentially like potential for new service offerings, right? So you have a space for social skills training and groups. You have a place for your staff to gather for that like culture. Your turn for the coffee.
And it's also
it's like you have centralized area. You have like a home, like you have a like a home base. You have so there's could be some increased efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you that the biggest like for me, and maybe again this is more office space than. Then, oh, was it in the picture? I apologize. This may be more for office space in general, but no one now knows where you live, right?
That, I mean, and that was a big thing. So when we went from clinic to just office space, like there, I think that was one thing that we were both on the same page on, even if we never had that discussion, is like, we don't want it back in our house.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons. We don't want people to know where we live. We just want our home to be separate. And so that's why I was actually consulting with a newer business owner who started in home and meets her staff. I mean, of course, she had to use her home office. I mean, her home address for like, you know, all the business things. Stuff, but she never, like her, she never invited her staff into her home. They would meet like in library rooms and coffee shops and things like that. And of course I, you know, we talked about the things to be careful about when you're doing that. And she got to the point where she was ready to just get an office space just for like a dedicated office space, like outside of her home, enough space where she could have some team meetings as she was growing and have like their staff come in. But she said, it's not going to be set up for children, for learners to come in. And that wasn't even her end goal. She was, I don't even think her end goal was to ever have a clinic, but having something outside of her home was important to her. So,
yeah, I mean, like I hear often like, oh, I don't want the clients to know my private address. And like, but my big thing is I don't want a disgruntled employee knowing where I live. That was more of the issue. Yes, and it was more of the issue that we had, right? And so that's not cool. I don't need them like, you know, coming in and
I mean, especially if an employee, it's one thing like if an employee is coming into your home as their workplace. And they're coming into your home to pick up supplies or to have meetings. They get familiar with your home and they kind of know your routine a little bit. Whereas a client's not going to know that. So it is a little bit more personal, a little bit more risky. So
in my opinion, yes. And then like the other thing is if you do have an in-home office and you are allowing people to come in. Whether you're just interviewing them or you are providing some training there or whatever, if you are in, again, you have to check with your county to see how many people are allowed to be in your home office at one time. If you have an HOA, this is something else. How many company cars are allowed to be parked on the street, right? How many people are allowed to be in there? Obviously, you're probably not going to be able to put signage up for that, so that's just another issue. These are just things to consider as you're making a decision on this. And we kind of got sidetracked on office space, but like, I mean, ideally, you know, if you, again, your vision is, I am going to build a clinic, it's going to be amazing and awesome, find a building where maybe you can lease a small office that has joining offices that you can expand. That would be an ideal scenario. Where so you can start off small and then you're like, okay, now it's time. I've hit all the benchmarks. I have high quality. I've got a certain amount of money in my account. I have a certain amount of billable hours and now I am ready. You know, I've got all my HIPAA stuff. Go through the list that's a decent list. I think it's 35 questions or something like that. And that will definitely help you with scaling, right? Am I ready to scale? Great. I'm ready to scale. Now I can expand.
All right. Let's see. I don't want to be too redundant, so I'm just going to look through my questions and see. Okay, I think this is worth looking at further. Mm-hmm. There might be a couple of things we haven't covered underneath this question. So, cool. What financial and operational factors should ABA business owners consider before investing in the clinic space? So, you've made the decision you're going clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So what financial and operational factors do you need to have in place?
I mean, I you really want to plan out how many kids do I plan on having in this space, right? Is there options to expand the clinic if I decide to grow, right? Those are like really important things. Again, if you're like, oh, I'm going to have a small clinic, it's 2,500 square feet, I can almost guarantee, even for one BCBA, that's not enough space. So I would be planning a larger space. And again, hey, great. If you can open up a 1,000 square foot clinic, knowing that there's plenty of office space on the same floor, the landlord's willing to allow me to buy several units and I can do my own construction and I can join them together, right? You'll need to get quotes because most landlords are not going to, like, you're going to get an empty room. It's probably not going to be the layout that you want. So this is another thing as far as, okay, now we have to build this entire thing out, right? That's something else that you'll need to know on the operation side. And depending on your area, like how much time is it going to take to get this built out? Is this 3 months of work? Is this 6 months of work? This is something, you know, way to say, I'm still paying for the lease, even though it's taking me 3 months to build this out. Like, these are just things that you want to figure out as you do it. So like, and then even that determination, you know, are we going to lease or are we going to buy, right? If I were to do it over again, I'd probably lean on the buying side of things, just because of the connections that we made, even recently, where we could get loans, you know what I mean? And
if we were to do it over again today in this day and time, yeah. I don't think, like, when we downsized from the clinic to the office space, it was fall of 2019. And it's one of those things I look back on and I see it as like a hidden like blessing in our life, or right, whatever you want to call it. Like it was, yeah, like time, the COVID timing, yeah, just worked perfectly, yeah, because we had less rent. Mm-hmm. And then because it ended up like we didn't even finish out that lease for the office, no, because COVID hit. We were all working from home.
Yeah.
I mean, I came to the office to hide when we were like all fighting, yes, with each other from being in our, yeah, house for so long. But then like that's kind of started the transition of us closing, right? Right. And we ended up like finding someone to sublease that to. Mm-hmm. And in that time, we wouldn't have been able to sell that office space anytime. Like it would have, sure, taken a lot, sure, to sell,
yeah,
because, you know, during those specific times and us moving out of country. Yeah. But now, you know, if the real estate market was in the right place, and we had the plan, of course, moving into that place, we had the plan that we were not moving, right?
Correct.
So things do change.
Yes, totally, totally. Yes.
But then I guess you could have potentially an investment situation where you could then rent it out or something, yes, like that.
Yes, obviously we want to look at the comps and like, yeah, am I ever going to be able to sell this, or is it oversaturated in this area? Right, like these are things obviously, yeah, you would do, right?
But it's definitely something to, yes, look into.
Something at least to consider. Am I going to, am I going to buy or am I going to lease? And normally a lease is going to be 3 to 5 years.
And I think, yeah, because they're longer for business leases. Yeah. So looking, I think when we're talking about operational considerations, it's important. I don't want to get into all the details and the nitty gritty. That's mm-hmm. for another time. But I do think it's important to note here mm-hmm. that you need to know your county, your city, ordinances, like zoning.
Yes, yes.
You know, sometimes totally. You can't be in a, like if there's already a similar type business in that area, you can't, they won't lease to you. But then also when you're looking at NAPS and, you know, like you maybe one of your things like, oh, I'll just do a clinic because that will take care of like these little kids who need naps and need lunch and they can just stay through it and look into that.
Yeah, normally.
Number 1, you can't bill for naps. Number 2, yeah. Like you have to look at like, do you need a daycare license? So that just opens up a can of worms. So operationally, you need to know exactly what you're expecting and then mm-hmm. you need to reach out to your city and your county and you need to look and see what kinds of ordinate, like what kind of like, what is the word? Like,
yeah, I mean, you what need business yeah. licenses, you need, and the big one is, yes, make sure, I've seen this a couple of times, where somebody goes ahead and leases a building, and then they realize they're in a zone for industrial, and they're not zoned for commercial, and it's like, wait a second, I can't put my clinic here, what am I going to do now, right? And now we're fighting with the landlord over that. So there's, yeah, you definitely want to make sure that if it is zoned industrial, that you can get it rezoned so you can have the clinic, right? There are obviously areas that zoning is not an issue, but it's something that I would absolutely look into. Again, knowing how many people you can have in the clinic is really important. I know I use the 250 square feet rule, but there's also, you know, you have to make the determination, can the parents stay in the waiting room while services are being delivered? Because there will be a maximum occupancy in there. And, you know, if you have 5 parents that are just kind of on their phones doing their thing.
Well, and they also have siblings, if they have, like, younger siblings along with them hanging out. Yeah, so that's like, more people.
Can you allow for that, like, logistically, right? Because you can't have a higher than the maximum. Like if something happens, there's a fire, and they find out you had 50 people and you should only have 20. Like this is not gonna end well, right? Yeah. So these are just things that you have to plan for. Like again, how big is our one-on-one rooms gonna be? Another thing that you'll have to determine what. Who's allowed to come to the clinic? So like what type of client are we able to provide services for children that are eloping or have violent tendencies, right? Are we can we work with 10-year-olds that are aggressive alongside of 2-year-olds? Like these are things, and how do we separate that, right? So these are things that you really need to understand. Like even bathrooms, right? If you,
well, I'm about to go into that. So no, I think that's a very important thing to think about, is like the population that you're serving and what types of children or individuals that you can have in the space together at the same time, and how, I mean, especially if you have a bigger space, it doesn't mean you can't have them in the space at the same time. But sure. How are you doing that? What does it look like?
Yeah, right? So maybe the younger kids go further to the back of the center, and you have the older kids.
Well, I mean, you have to be careful if they're sharing hallways.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just want to set these things up, right? Yeah. There's a lot of logistics, and we are not covering, like, this is 40 minutes, and we are not covering, we're skimming the surface.
Yes.
So it's just some, like, I hope what you take from this podcast is I need to plan, right? I need to look at my vision a little bit closer and do a deep dive into it, how this is going to look, before just saying, wow, I'm supposed to get a clinic. I guess I better get a clinic now.
Exactly. That's the whole point of this, is to get you thinking and like realizing that, getting curious and realizing there's a lot more to this than maybe you thought.
Yeah.
So let's go into...
Oh, can I pause one thing? Noise is going to be an issue.
Yeah.
So I do recommend that if you are leasing that you have a noise clause in your lease. So, because the last thing, and I've seen this as well, you get in there 3 months and then people around you are like, this, I cannot work like this. You know, you got accountants or you got attorneys beside you and they're hearing kids. They may not be okay with that. So, having that noise clause so you cannot be kicked out of your building, because I have seen this where you put all this work into this building, you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars building this thing out, and now you're kicked out in 3 months because you're too loud. So having that conversation with your landlord, how are we going to soundproof this, right? That's something that you just want to have that conversation.
So you sure can tell that we're husband and wife when we've worked together for quite a while, because you're just like, I don't even think you need me here guiding you in this conversation, or maybe I've just already anticipated what you would say. Anyway, so yeah, that is the next point is, okay, how can ABA business owners choose the right location and design for their new clinic? And so, you know, toilets and yes, noise, yes, and waiting rooms, yeah, and accessibility,
yes,
proximity to, yes, key clients,
because there and is all of going
that.
To
so
be,
go ahead, take go.
Yeah,
go
I mean,
for it.
like the biggest thing that you just have to consider is there's going to be this push and pull of keeping the kids locked up and safe, and also if there is a fire or an emergency, or heaven forbid, there's a shooter, whatever, in the building. Mm-hmm. How do we escape quickly, right? But if you have a children that elope, how do we make sure that they don't run out the fire exits, right? So these are just things that working, I would highly recommend that you go to your local fire department, talk to the fire marshal, and see how we can keep this place safe for these kids that are, you know,
learners. I yes, mean, they could be yes, adults.
Yeah,
too,
no, yeah, totally. Yeah. So we want to keep them safe, but we also have to make sure that they, you know, don't run out in the street. So these are really important considerations.
Yeah. And something else for layout, mm-hmm, like looking at safety too, is like kitchens. So our,
again, if you're talking kitchen, you're probably, you
no,
may be
I'm
a daycare.
No, I'm
you
talking staff kitchen.
Sure.
I'm talking staff kitchen. Okay. Yeah, that's good. If you're going to be providing meals for children, you got to look into that.
Even maybe heating up food.
Food for kids, you know. So that's why I said you may need a different license, a yes, daycare license, if you're looking at napping and eating. And then even to a certain level, like toileting, yes, all of that, you really have to look into that. Like you said, we can't go into all the details in such a short period of time, but please look into that.
Yes.
Reach out to us if you have any more questions. But okay, going back to the kitchen, like if you just have a staff break room, mm-hmm, or a staff kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. We had one in our clinic space. It didn't have a dedicated door to it.
Right.
It wasn't an open concept. It was a specific room, but we did have to finagle a baby gate system.
Right.
And I, you know, I'm sure there's better ways. We probably could have like asked to install a door there. It would have probably been even better. But you know, like if there's staff heating up, if there's a coffee pot going, mm-hmm, if there's staff heating up food, if, you know, there's knives and what, I mean, just not with no, just the fact of having little kids potentially, or even adults, but people who may not understand the safety issues in a kitchen, right? You need to be able to keep that safe separate.
Yeah, there was something, and
I'm sorry.
No, it's not your problem. Like, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider.
Right.
I'm sure.
What do
we'll
you want your
one-on-one
spaces to look like? Do you want separate rooms? Is it going to be open? Are you going to have dividers? How, like, even looking at attention spans, and things like that. And then, like, just in sensory spaces, if you're going to have like a sensory space, just taking into consideration all of those safety things, right? If you're going to have swings, if you're going to, and that might even be something to ask like your insurance about, right? Like what, like, cause I know some insurances won't cover trampolines in spaces. And so if you're going to have sensory swings, what kind of flooring? You're going to have like foam flooring, like the appropriate flooring. That was my dream for, that was the main reason I wanted a clinic, was to have a sensory space. We ended up not going that route because we switched gears and it was going to be very costly. But even in our like toy rooms, our playrooms, our therapy rooms, we made sure the shelves were bolted to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so you have to look at safety within everything as well.
So just a couple more things.
Did you get it?
Yeah, we're 47 minutes.
Yeah.
So we have another podcast on cameras in the clinic.
Oh yeah.
Really important. I would highly recommend just 3Pi camera system. Probably will pull it up. So I would highly recommend listening to that. Are these security cameras or are you making medical decisions, with these cameras? Those are different things. So please check that out. Okay. There's a, like, securing cameras, really important.
Yes.
The other thing is securing access to the clinic. Are we using PIN numbers? Are we using locks? The keys. I can with almost certainty, somebody's going to lose a key. Or you're going to fire someone. They don't return the key. Now we have to redo the locks. So I would
reissue keys for everybody. Yeah, we were there. It's very expensive and very time consuming.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend, and you want to talk to your, because you're going to have this issue with, hey, the landlord needs access, and that's another issue as far as HIPAA. When can the landlord show up randomly? Are they allowed to go through the entire office and look at your stuff, right? So you want to have clauses in your lease for that. The other thing as part of HIPAA is a risk assessment, is making sure that you have stuff in the building like emergency preparedness stuff. So that's something that you want to make sure that you have as well. The other thing is medication. And there's two issues with meds. So you have a staff member, they're diabetic, they keep their insulin and I assume you would put the insulin in the fridge, but maybe...
there's like kitchen access,
yes,
right?
Yes. So then you have your needles.
Well,
right?
if you have a cooler, if you bring a cooler
if
you have Advil in your purse.
Yeah, no, anything, right? So like any kind of medication, Advil, I don't know what kind of medication these people have. They need to be locked up and secure, right? Like it doesn't matter.
Right?
Yeah, it doesn't like, so their personal items, like you can even talk about Like you could have older kids, they may try to swipe somebody's purse or steal the cash out of their purse. Like, these are things that happen. So, like, having that secured and locked up and your staff has places to secure their belongings is really important.
Yeah, so some, like, either locker space, mm-hmm. or we had, like, locking rolling carts or... Yeah, that is also something that take... Even not just looking at security, that even though that's the main point, but like staff should have a designated spot to be able to put their things.
Maybe they have, like, they like to vape. I don't know. It's in their purse or in their bag, and the kid grabs it, right? Like, these are just... So there's so many things.
Yes. Do you have one more thing?
But it's still on medication.
Okay.
Like, so you also have to make the decision, are we administering medication to clients, right? Like, again, you're going to have a lot of clients.
Well,
not only
are you administering, but are you going to allow them to take, like, if the parent's like, oh, well, he can take his own Motrin here, give it to him at 12.
Yeah.
You know, then, like, or are you doing that?
So normally when there is an administering of medication, you need a registered nurse. So this is, again, It's just something that you need to consider. So, yeah.
You know, I don't know that we have. So our next step is how can business owners manage a smooth transition from in-home services to a clinic-based model? And something that's popping up in my head right now that I don't know that we already have, but would be a great idea for one of the planning pieces of this is a checklist, like looking at clients specifically. Like if you're looking at clients, moving the clients from in-home to clinic space, like having just an initial screening checklist, even if you're not made the decision fully, if you're going to go to clinic, having a screening checklist, do we have as far as like
supervisor handbook? It's do they meet the criteria for the clinic? Yes.
But is that for social skills or is that for clinic too?
I think it includes both.
Okay. So like things like, toileting and of course the behavior, like the physical, property destruction and elopement and aggressive behavior. Yep. But then also like, do they take a medication at home, but the parents are just there to give it? I mean, some of those things we don't even think about because they just happen within the normal flow of being at home and doing services. Yes. But can you provide that within the clinic space?
So again, there's lots to consider. And while there is a lot of risk at home, there is also new, wonderful risk in the clinic, right? And so if your assumption is it's going to be easier in the clinic than it is in at home, again, it's worth taking just a little bit of time and just kind of gaming this out. Like, okay, if this happens, what do I do here, right? This is why the government requires that you do a risk analysis. And so this is not a burden. This is a necessary thing that you have to do. Okay, am I ready for this? It's really important. There's a lot of risk, and I don't mean to scare you. It's just it is what it is, and I want you to succeed, and I know you want to succeed, and so we just want to make sure, just like anything else, that we have the knowledge we need, and then we can make the right decisions. So yeah.
Whew, that's a lot of information. And like we said several times, I'm going to state it one more time. It's just a quick overview.
We have all an entire section on starting a clinic in our ABA Business Leaders membership, like an entire section that could be expanded upon, right?
So 100%, yes, 100%. Yeah. And that's definitely an area that we have information on, and like you said, we'll continue to grow in that area. And of course, if you want to reach out to us for consulting or anything, you have specific projects within or need help with this, we're here to help. And of course, you can even post in the ABA Business Leaders Facebook group, and you can get some questions answered there as well. But we thank you so much for your time and for joining us today and listening to all we have to say. And that rhymed, so I feel like I need another rhyming word to end this on, but it's not going to happen. So hope you have an amazing day. If you like what you hear and you want to subscribe to the podcast and rate it and
leave a review.
That would be amazing. Yeah. And we hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
And check out that.
Oh yeah, we'll put a link. Quiz. We'll put a link here really to the quiz. Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely. That's your challenge. Yeah. For this week is to fill out the scaling quiz and see where you are.
It should take you about, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes. Yeah. It's worthwhile.
Let us know how you do on it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquare.com.